This is The Other Side of Midnight, and you can picture me as a guy that is pretty surprised. Imagine me turning white just moments ago, because I've told you what we're dealing with here. So far, none of the phones are working right now. But moments ago, Steve Adubato, who in spite of the fact that he has literally a PhD in communications, is one of the least able people when it comes to the field of communications technology, he was actually able to figure out how to connect with us on the Opal, and I now have the pleasure of introducing Emmy Award-winning anchor on PBS, host of the Lessons in Leadership podcast, author of the book Lessons in Leadership, the one and only Steve Adubato. Hello, Steve. My compliments.
Frank, why do you hurt me like this? Why? And we've been together through all kinds of things. We're media colleagues. We're Italian-American brothers. We love The Godfather. And you hit me with my technological shortcomings. Well, By the way, my wife just put on... Jen, did you just put on the alarm? I'm on the phone with Frank. What are you doing? I'm sorry, hon. She just gave me side-eye, Frank.
I hear you. Believe me.
I can't do the alarm. I can't do the phones. All right, let's talk leadership. I can do leadership.
All right. You certainly are an expert in leadership. You've written the book on leadership. And when I was promoting your appearance, a couple of people say, oh, I'm not crazy about Steve Adubato. I don't agree with him on this. I don't agree with him on that.
I hate when my mother calls in and says
Stop,
that.
Stop, please. Your mother's terrific. But you are someone who, even if people may disagree with your news or political analysis, I don't think anybody can differ with the almost encyclopedic knowledge and study that you've put into the field of leadership itself. Now, talk to me about President Biden's leadership. He's getting a lot of credit for the vaccine, not getting very much credit for his handling of the border. I know you were certainly a critic of former President Trump's. How do you think, going into now the middle of or early June, how do you think President Biden's done, not necessarily on the policy point of view, but from a leadership perspective?
Well, first of all, Frank, the whole question of how someone views my politics or what they think my views are. Here's what's interesting to me. And my friends often say this. A lot of my friends voted for former President Trump and some voted for Biden. But they'll often say, whose side are you on? And here's the way I look at it. When I look at Biden or Trump or Obama or anyone else, Governors Murphy and Cuomo, I don't care what party they're in. I don't care who I voted for or didn't vote for. I try to look at it as objectively as possible. And when it comes to leadership with President Biden, I give him points for being solid, for having empathy, for having compassion for people, for not being as erratic as former President Trump was, in my view, in some of those press conferences, shoot the bleach under the arm. I don't give Joe Biden a lot of points for his communication skills as a leader. I saw that press conference, Frank. I was cringing. I'm cringing at the fact that he's got this list. He's got a call on certain people. They have specific questions. He appears to know what's coming. He's not good on his feet. He's not good off the teleprompter. Now, you may ask, what does this have to do with leadership? A leader has to be quick on his or her feet. They have to be agile. They have to do, frankly, a lot of what people in the communications field do. That doesn't mean they're a radio talk show host or a TV broadcaster, but Joe Biden struggles when he's communicating and it gets him into trouble. And frankly, it doesn't give you a sense of confidence at times. So on that track, I do not feel he's doing particularly well. Overall, calm demeanor, solid. And by the way, former President Trump does get a lot of points on the Operation Warp Speed. Biden gets some points on helping people understand why it's important to take the vaccine. We're doing better than we were before, but that was a combined effort from the Trump administration and with the Biden administration so far.
How did you choose to start studying leadership? Of all the things, I mean, you clearly are an expert in communications. You've been a state legislator, and you're an expert in many different aspects of public policy. Why, of all the things that you could focus on in your writing, your podcast, your television work, why choose, of all things, the subject of leadership?
Well, first of all, I grew up around a very strong leader. My father, Steve Adubato Sr., was a very powerful, strong figure in New Jersey. In Newark in particular, he started a not-for-profit center, the first charter school in the state of New Jersey. Bottom line is this. I saw him lead with an iron fist. I wrote about him in my book, Lessons in Leadership, all the things I learned from him about how to motivate people, how to run a meeting, et cetera, et cetera. But then I also learned, as God rest his soul, I miss my dad, he was also brutal, Frank. And again, my mom is listening, I know. But I'll say this, my dad could be very rough with people, tough with people, in their face, too aggressive in my view in some cases. And I started to try to say, wait a minute, what are the mistakes we make as leaders? How do you find the balance between being tough, but also being empathetic and compassionate, having high standards, but not bullying people? So I became a student of leadership. I also acknowledge in my book, my mistakes as a leader and what I've learned from them. And frankly, as I coach around leadership and I do the podcast and I do a lot of seminars, I find out other people struggling as leaders all the time. So I'm fascinated talking, living, thinking, reading, writing about leadership, mostly because all of us, including parents, try to be the best leaders we can be.
We're talking with Steve Adubato. He's an Emmy Award-winning anchor on PBS, author of the book Lessons in Leadership. Some great stories in there on the subject of leadership. You can also check out his website, steveadubato.org. That's A-D-U-B-A-T-O.org. Steve, let me ask you about this January 6th investigation. There was a call to have an independent bipartisan commission investigate this, similar to what your former governor, Tom Kaine, chaired in the aftermath of September 11th. The Senate Republicans, at least most of them, haven't been willing to go along with that. Do you think an independent commission is needed? Why or why not?
So you know what's interesting, Frank, from a political point of view? See, again, my paradigm, my worldview is around leadership. Okay? From a political point of view, I get why Republicans don't want to have that investigation. As an American citizen who loves our representative democracy, who cares about the truth, regardless of whether you're Democrat or Republican, from a leadership perspective, it's a mistake. From a leadership perspective. Not have the commission, because the truth is this. I don't care whether you voted for Trump or Biden. I don't care if you think Biden's the worst, Trump is the worst, the best. It doesn't matter. The truth as to what happened on the 6th matters for our country. It matters for us as patriots. It matters for us as just in terms of protecting our institutions of government. I don't care whether you like Congress or not. You can't have members of Congress, and way more importantly, Frank, law enforcement professionals put on the other end of an assault like that. And people who say, I love the blue, I love the cops. I do too, by the way. Mistakes and all. Thank God for the cops. Defunding the police. Lunacy. Anyone who says they love cops, they stand for people in blue, our brothers and sisters, and doesn't want the truth as to what happened on the 6th while those cops were attacked and assaulted, it's totally inconsistent, a lack of leadership and a lack of integrity.
I think Bill Bratton, former New York City and Los Angeles police commissioner, made the same point to the New York Times last week in saying how inconsistent it was to be so supportive of the police when it comes to rhetoric, but when folks are throwing things or attacking police, not show that same degree of support. So you and Bill Bratton are on the same page on that. But why,
Frank? Frank, one quick point on that.
Sure.
The Antifa folks, the folks out in Portland, and the folks who are attacking police, assaulting police, spitting on police, it's not a question of both sides. It's a question of anyone who's a decent citizen, a decent human being, someone who cares about our country and respects our cops. Again, mistakes and all. I got to tell you something. I don't see how you can say those Antifa people, Black Lives Matter attacking cops. You've got to be consistent here, Frank. It isn't a question of whether you're a Democrat or Republican. If you care about our cops and you care about our country and you care about the rule of law, you've got to investigate.
Why do you think, since there are prosecutions going forward of some of these Capitol Hill rioters, why do you think that a congressionally appointed independent commission is better suited to handle that investigation than, say, the Department of Justice or the FBI or existing law enforcement entities?
Well, I don't think it's either or. I mean, to me, those law enforcement entities have to do that, have to find out. See, you know, Frank, think about this for a second. Could you imagine if members of Congress were actually interacting with, engaging with, giving information to people who are trying to overthrow the government and assault and attack not just the building of the Capitol, but members of Congress. Could you imagine if law enforcement professionals were involved, former military people, particularly as we just, you know, pay respect to all those who gave so much to our lives in the military. Could you imagine if some of them disgraced the country and their service by being a part of an insurrection? That's not simply a question of prosecuting individuals. It's trying to understand a larger, if there was a conspiracy or not, we need to find out the truth. I don't know, but I want to know.
Let me read you this quote from somebody that's not exactly considered a conservative, and that's our mutual friend Ron Kuby. And he posted this on social media on January 6th, right as the storming of the Capitol was taking place, or right after. He said, and again, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read a portion of it. He said, sure. This is not a coup or even a coup attempt. This is a child's play about a coup. It is counting coup, but with selfies. A dozen doofuses in costume roaming the Senate chamber is not a threat to democracy. Would it be better if they were taken down, arrested, and dragged out? Maybe. But they are just taking pictures and leaving to be cheered on by the other kids. The other boys in the crowd as, did you get it? I know that weenies in Congress want to think they are living in White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen, but this is more kindergarten cop. Stop saying words like concussion grenade, because those words mean real things that have nothing to do with what you're talking about. This is the last day of school for a particularly troubled group of children having a massive tantrum. Stop the breathless reporting. Please stop. Just stop. Why is Ron wrong in his analysis of the severity of that?
I don't say Ron's wrong, but I'll say this. There's an image that keeps playing out in my mind, and I hope everyone who's listening to your great show overnight, Frank, and that is of that cop who was pinned in that. I don't even know if it was, the cops were up against those who were trying to take over the building, and he was squeezed into this. It almost looked like a glass enclosed area, and he couldn't breathe, and he was suffocating, and they wouldn't stop, and no one backed away. And I'm thinking, really, selfies? Is that what we're going to say? All I'm saying, Frank, is when you see people smashing through with the American flag or a Trump flag or whatever, and you see people looking for Mike Pence to kill him or Nancy Pelosi, I don't care what your politics is or is not. Stop. I don't know what Ron saw or didn't see. That's what I saw. And I want to understand what happened, Frank. And that's not conservative, liberal, Democrat or Republican, it's just wanting to understand the truth.
Let me get your take on what's happening in New Jersey. You are an expert in Jersey politics. You've covered it for a long time. We're seeing a Republican primary for governor, which is probably a little more competitive than many of us thought.
Very, very competitive.
How do you see that breaking down? You have Jack Cittarelli, who seems to be the favorite, and then he's facing an energetic challenge from his right. How do you see the Republican primary breaking down? And the primary is next week, right? Next Tuesday?
It's coming up. Yeah, it's actually next Tuesday. You're right. So here's what's interesting, Frank. The Republican primary election, and you know Republican Party politics better than anyone I know. But I got to tell you something. Winning a Republican primary in New Jersey and winning a general election, it's like someone who plays football and then thinks they can walk onto the baseball field right. And play center for the New York Yankees. It doesn't work that way. They're actually two different sports. It's two different elections. Jack Cittarelli has boxed himself in. I've known Jack for years. I respect him. He's a friend. His problem is he's a moderate Republican. And he moves so far to the right because that's where the attack is coming from. Say he even wins. I think he's going to win by a small margin in the Republican primary. This is a blue state. This is a state with a lot of urban areas. I live in the town of Montclair. They often call it the People's Republic of Montclair. I don't think they're that far off. The truth is this. Jack Cittarelli, even if he wins that primary, has moved so far to the right. He said 5 years ago, Frank, that Donald Trump wasn't fit for office. Then he's at Trump rallies.
Yeah.
Then
totally.
And so the problem is, I don't even care if you like the guy. Be consistent. I don't care if you don't like the guy. Be consistent. He didn't even say I disagree with him. He said he's not fit for office. And then all of a sudden, he thinks what about Trump? All I'm saying is Trump, even though he's not president, Donald Trump is hovering over this Republican primary. And Jack Cittarelli has boxed himself in because no one knows what he really stands for at this point.
So
Phil Murphy's just sitting there laughing at, you know, all the way to the bank, if you will. Not that he's got enough money. He doesn't have to
exactly.
Go to the bank.
He's doing fine. So whether Cittarelli wins or whether he loses, you don't see this being a competitive general election in New Jersey either way.
Here's the rub. If kids are not back in school, and we have two public school kids, one in a parochial school, and I got to tell you something. If our kids are not in school 5 days a week in September, no caveats, no this, no that. If that doesn't happen, Phil Murphy's got a problem. If more and more businesses continue to fail, and I pray for all those businesses, big, small, middle-sized, who have closed down, if the economy for those businesses continues to suffer, Phil Murphy will take a hit on this. Yes, we're sixth, I believe, fifth or sixth when it comes to vaccines. But I got to tell you something. It's like the stock market, Frank, only the stakes are a lot higher. When things are going well, you give credit probably too much credit to the incumbent. But in a situation like this, if things go bad in terms of schools and businesses and the economy in New Jersey, Phil Murphy may have a problem, even in a very blue state.
And, Steve, let me ask you about our governor here in New York, Andrew Cuomo. He's under multiple investigations. There's an impeachment inquiry. You have the nursing home scandal. You have the cover-up of the nursing home scandal.
Yeah.
You have the sexual harassment stuff. You have the Tappan Zee Bridge scandal, the cover-up of the Tappan Zee Bridge scandal. I'm sure I'm leaving off.
How long is your list, Frank?
We only have a four-hour show, so I can't list everything. He's having this huge, big-money fundraiser next week.
He appears
poised to run for re-election. Election next year. His poll numbers may have stabilized a bit. Give me both on the merits of Andrew Cuomo's leadership ability and on the politics of Andrew Cuomo's future prospects as governor, how you see the Cuomo situation.
First of all, I don't consider myself an expert on New York politics, but I'll say this on the leadership front, an abysmal failure. And I'll tell you why. By the way, I was hearing some tapping, Frank. I want to make sure you can still hear me, right?
I hear you perfectly, for better
or
worse.
So here it is. No. Okay, well, here it comes. And this is for all the people listening to your great show who, quote, think they don't like where I'm coming from. I'll remind you, I'm coming from a leadership perspective. And I don't care whether my father was a Democrat or my grandfather was Republican. Both happen to be. That's a fact. Andrew Cuomo writes a book about leadership. I wrote a book about leadership, too. I know he made a lot more money because I saw what he got in his royalties or his
I think you had a lot more sales, though.
Well, I'm going to say this because his book was stopped, and I'll tell you why. The idea that Andrew Cuomo – look, people make mistakes. I'm not the governor. I was a state legislator as a kid, one term, and then lost my seat. So I'm not in a position to be the governor. But I got to tell you something. The fact that he did what he did regarding the nursing homes by sending people who were in nursing homes, went to hospitals – with COVID, and then back into the nursing homes without, I always say trust, but verify, right? Not just with nuclear arms, but in terms of this, his Department of Health should have verified that it was safe for them to go back. It was not safe. And then further in the book, Frank, I looked at it five times. I didn't see one word him saying, I made a mistake about this. Now they double down and they underestimate by about half all the people who died in nursing homes. And basically he said, does it really matter where they died, Governor? It sure does, particularly for the family members who lost loved ones. The level of insensitivity, the lack of empathy and compassion and humility to admit the mistake and write a book on leadership at the same time, it's abysmal. It's embarrassing. What does that mean politically? I don't know. But if I were him, I would own up, take responsibility, and say, I screwed up big time, and it hurt a lot of people. But I don't expect that.
Not from this governor, I'll tell you. Finally, Steve, we are now basically unofficially in summer. That for you means very much beach house season. Now, remind the plebeians in our audience what your beach house venue of choice is down at the Jersey Shore.
Frank, let me just say this. Beautiful Lavalette, New Jersey. Right? It's a little town. The boardwalk is not like the Seaside Heights boardwalk, which I love to go to, or Point Pleasant. But I will say this. It's in Lavalette. I know you have friends down there. You've got all the things going down on the Jersey Shore. It is quiet. You can't ride your bike after 6 o'clock in the evening because they say it's traffic and it's dangerous with people walking. It is a nice little town, and I think 90% of the people in Lavalette voted for former President Donald Trump because I saw the Trump signs.
Yeah.
So I keep my head down. When I'm down there, I keep my head down.
I was almost in Lavalette last Friday, but
I didn't want
to face the 2 hours and 40 minutes of traffic to see my friend Kyle O'Brien and Joe Nolan. Yeah.
Was it the Joe Nolan party?
Yeah,
at the Krabs Claw. Let me tell you, the Krabs Claw is iconic. They had a guy, Frankie Fingers. He played the piano, Frank. I got to tell you something. For about 50 years, he's in his 90s. That's the Krabs Claw. It's a great crowd. It's a family crowd. And that's, you know, the Jersey Shore. You got to love it.
I may pop in and surprise you on my way down to Cape May at the end of June and do some party crashing. So we'll see. I know you're
some radio. Ours is the beautiful house on the beach playing Sinatra. And then after that, Springsteen.
I'll see you out there, Steve. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you, my friend.
My honor, as always. You're the best, Frank.
If you want to comment on any portion of my discussion with Steve Adubato, give me a call. 1-800. Well, actually, I'm not sure if we'll have the phones fixed by the time we come back from break. Give me an attempt at a phone call. 800-848-9222. Otherwise, you could find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.